back on the Talking Drumline, talking about the president's executive order banning travel from 7 countries that are predominantly Muslim. In this next segment, we're going to talk to Jacob Bender from CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which we understand is about to sue Mr. Trump over this executive order after hundreds of people have packed airports all around the country. Jacob Bender, welcome to WURD.
Thank you, Barbara. We certainly live in extraordinary times.
Extraordinary times. Times that honestly I never thought I would see. I thought that we fought some of these battles many, many years ago, Jacob.
Yep. It's like everything that has happened positive in the country since the New Deal is in danger of being rolled back. And,
well,
my grandparents came here from Russia in the turn of this last century and worked in sweatshops for 14 hours a day until the 8-hour day was instituted based upon the strength and the courage of the labor unions. And, you know, are we going to get to the day when we'll see, 8-year-old boys and girls carrying piles of clothing around the streets again?
Well, among other things, I mean, you know, for folk in my community, there is a Voting Rights Act, there is an Equal Rights Act, there is the whole issue of equal protection under the law, as you've seen, even as recently as the latest marches on MLK Day and the Black Lives Matter movement. So, yes, there is a lot at risk, and right now, there really is Dr. King's fierce urgency of now over the last 3 days. Days in the aftermath of this executive order. I guess I want to talk to you a little bit about the suit in a moment, but what is the status of things? You've been working at the Philadelphia airport with some of the folk down there. Where are things right now?
Well, first of all, the lawsuit is being done through our national office,
mm-hmm.
not through the local Philadelphia office.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
Though many of our members were at the airport on Saturday and Sunday. It's an extraordinary sight. When you go to internet and we could see live protests in New York City and in Seattle and in Philadelphia and in small airports all around the country, the outpouring of anguish, the outpouring of outrage at the clear unconstitutional division of humanity into Muslims and non-Muslims, where part of the executive order specifically said that Christians would be welcomed from Iran and Iraq, but not Muslims. I mean, this calls us, as a Jew, I'm wary of, like, calling up Nazi and German fascist parallels and similarities. But, when we divide Americans between Muslim and non-Muslims, between white and black, between building walls between Latino and Anglos, I mean, this is the bringing forth of the worst that this country has engaged in rather than the best that we have struggled for through these many, many years.
Interesting, and I don't want to, put you in an uncomfortable place, but one of the things that I have been feeling, and just from my own paltry knowledge of history, is that there are many parallels between what is happening now and what happened in Nazi Germany, it seems to me. I mean, we have a leader who is now acting more like a dictator than he is a duly elected president of the United States. I mean, we just had a discussion a bit ago about how the Republicans in this country were decrying the use of the executive order, saying that was the act of dictatorship and a one man band, as opposed to some place that is inclusive and consultative. But we have seen this flurry of orders now with this last one that has just really kind of set the country in a tizzy again.
Absolutely. This is a president who, as the Khan family pointed out at the Democratic Convention when Kabir Khan held up the U.S. Constitution and challenged Mr. Trump to have actually to read the document, that we're seeing a series of executive orders which just boggle the mind in terms of their open racism, open discrimination, their lack of historical knowledge, and you know, these orders will do this country irreparable harm around the world. You know, so you know.
Spin that out for us.
It's not you who are putting me in uncomfortable. You know, I've been in an uncomfortable position for the last, you know, since November 9th. You
yes.
know, when we wake up and, you know, was I reading 1984 last night? I mean, what happened?
Well, on just a little aside, I understand that the sales of the book 1984 have skyrocketed. That's right. Big Brother is indeed watching. And when I sent a note to somebody saying that today, and their response was, Big Brother is in charge now. But you talked about how this order was unconstitutional. Why?
Because it created a religious test. For immigration. I mean, the seven countries that were named were all Muslim majority countries. Now, there are other Muslim majority countries that were not on the list that where people who terrorist actions were originated from those countries. And yet, as somebody pointed out, these countries have had business dealings with the U.S. and with the Trump Organization for many years, and strangely enough, were not on the list. For instance, such as Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Now, we are of course not proposing that he add countries to the list. The whole idea of a list is ridiculous and counterproductive.
But it's very curious, yes.
But it's very curious to note that the countries where, in fact, extremism has been prevalent, such as Pakistan, are not listed in the order.
And so what has CARE's role been in all of this? And now, I don't know if you could talk a little about the national suit. What have you all been doing and hearing and seeing on the ground?
Well, we've been getting numerous phone calls from Muslim community members around the greater Delaware Valley. There's a great level of apprehension. CARE is continuing to organize town hall meetings around the Muslim community, bringing lawyers and experts. And at this point, we are clearly recommending that people without citizenship, or if they have valid green card green cards, they should seek legal advice before leaving the country.
Because they may not be able to return.
Yes. I heard it, you know, just a heart-wrenching story yesterday on the radio about a, I think, an Iraqi musician who has been in this country for 16 years with a green card, and he's doing a concert tour in Lebanon now and may not be able to come back. But, you know, in 16 years he sunk down, you know, roots in this country, and you know, and the thought of people being turned back once they got to the airport, after having gone through the complex and Byzantine vetting process that this government has engaged in to make sure that, you know, quote unquote, these are, you know, good people, not quote unquote bad hombres, you know, in the words of, you know, the chief hombre, who were sent back. You know, many people in this country now remember the St. Louis a ship filled with refugees that mostly Jewish that got out of Nazi-occupied Europe and came to these shores and were sent back to Europe because of a quota system and an unconcern for refugees that existed even during FDR's time. And, you know, the analogies just fly in the face and evoke within my family and with anybody with a sense of American history a disgust with the orders and statements coming out of Washington, especially from people such as, you know, Steve Bowman, who keeps getting more important positions, you know, all the time.
What is the impact now on families, on children particularly?
Devastating. I mean, that's the only, you know, term that one can use when, you know, we consider the ramifications of families not being reunited after, you know, having almost like a carrot or freedom being dangled in front of them and then, you know, yanked away and having, you know, families being sent back to Syria, which the UN has labeled the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II.
Do you know the mayor, I think, was out there one day this weekend and basically said that,
yes,
that
God,
the president,
God bless him.
Yeah, got to give him a shout out for that, and the governor as well. It said that he was, you know, sentencing some of these people to death. Is that your conclusion, that some of these folk are in such danger that, I mean, he's kind of signed their death warrants?
Well, that's been true, you know, all along. What makes, you know, where thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have died, you know, in Syria and Iraq because of the civil wars, because of the violence, because they have been targeted for their human rights work or just being part of a different political party in these countries, which were destabilized, obviously beyond repair, back in 2003 by the invasion led by Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld. So, you know, one's heart just breaks at the thought of people getting so close to freedom and then being turned back.
You know, this is all being done, quote, in the name of national security, some effort to keep us all safer. You know, never mind that most of the acts of terrorism that have been perpetrated, executed on U.S. soil have been from sort of homegrown guys, who would not be affected by this ban. But what is your take on this issue of security? Is this going to make us safer, or as some people are questioning, will this make us less safe?
Experts have been saying for, you know, many months, if not longer, that the policies of aggression and of violence feed directly into the hands and deeds of ISIS and extremist, violent, hate-filled groups like that, who can now argue that indeed there is what the neocons called a clash of civilization. They can argue that America, in spite of what President Obama had said, and even President Bush had said for, you know, for years, that America is not at war with 1.6 billion Muslims around the world. ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other groups can now argue that, in fact, America is targeting Muslims and the Muslim world, and that this is a perpetual war that needs to be fought to the bitter end. So many, many experts have argued that the U.S. is far less secure by pursuing policies such as this.
We're talking to Jacob Bender, who is Executive Director of CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. We have to take a break. You're listening to the Talking Drumline. But on the other side of the break, wanted to talk to you a little bit about the idea of this impacting the kind of cooperation that that the United States needs from Muslims, both in Muslim communities here and abroad. We'll be right back. And we're on the Talking Drum Line talking to Jacob Bender, who's Executive Director of the of CARE, which is the Council on American-Islamic Relations, about the president's executive order and its impact and kind of what the next steps might be. Also invite you to join us in the conversation if you have a question for Jacob. We're at 215-634-8065, 866-361-0900. We're going to get to our calls in a minute and to your questions, but wanted to ask you, Jacob, how this sort of impact, it seems to me that this undermines our whole effort to try to fight terrorism in this sense. If you are detaining and turning back and sending back people who have come from, and I'm talking, I guess I'm focusing on Syria especially, but from any of these seven countries, if you will, people who have come here with a valid visa and an approval for a green card, an immigration card, legal immigrants who have, in some cases, actually risked their lives to work with the American military, mm-hmm. to give, you know, provide information.
Translators.
Exactly. So how are we going to gain the trust and cooperation of people if we're behaving like this now? It seems to me you've just, like, you know, spit in the wind.
Yep. Turn back the clock, you know, decades and decades, and increases the likelihood that ISIS will grow and expand and eventually do more harm to American citizens, even, you know, God forbid, attacks on this country. The other side, though, is that people around the world have seen the extraordinary sight of tens of thousands of Americans going to airports to protest these racist and bigoted actions initiated by the president of these United States. And, you know, that should really give us, you know, that's the hope hidden in the current trauma that we're going through, that so many people of goodwill, a rainbow of humanity has gathered in the streets and airports of this country to say that we will not be silent. We will not go like sheep to the slaughter, and we will not allow our fellow human beings to be treated like this, whether they be Muslim or African American or Latinos escaping desperate poverty and trying to get across the Rio Grande. This is not the best of our country, and we won't put up with it. And, you know, I remember having grown up in the Vietnam era that, LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, at the end of his presidency, was virtually a prisoner in the White House, because every time he stepped out of the White House, he was met by thousands upon thousands of anti-war protesters. And I think we will see the same thing happen to this guy now.
Well, let us hope so. I, like you, I've been out there marching too since November 9th. We have a caller with a question. Greg from East Falls, you have a question for Jacob Bender?
Yeah, how you doing there?
Thank you.
I have to ask you two questions. I wanted to know what was your take on the Trump administration has actually now, I don't know if you've seen interviews, blamed President Obama for the existence of them having the ability or the authority to single out these countries, and in fact was claiming that that was something that they were beginning to do. As I understand it, President Obama did sign I don't know the particular law, don't quote me on it, but it allows for them to do something like the meeting of the country, do something like that when you're traveling, and it specifically talks about Muslims. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. And the other piece I would like to ask, I asked Barbara this some time ago, what does your group think about, in the Constitution, it actually tells us that we have a right, a duty, and an obligation when we see anyone running afoul of the Constitution, we have a right to do something and are expected to do something. What is your thoughts about that? And I know that you are Islamically oriented or in terms of what your title is, but what do you see? And can you elaborate on that or any collaborative efforts or any discussions about actually, you know, going to court more so about this man just totally disregarding the Constitution, and we have an obligation to respond to that, if I made any sense.
Okay, we'll take them one at a time. One being the comparison.
Obama.
Yes.
You know, I think we miss that family. You know, why couldn't there be three terms? You know, you know, compared to the people running the White House now, you know, we. The Obama family, you know, with in our minds, you know, their departure was, you know, from the White House was, you know, a tragedy. But, you know, speaking honestly, you know, there were many things such as the drone program and the inability to finally close Guantanamo prison that President Obama did that. I personally, and many people in the Muslim community, and you know, many social critics, found the Obama administration lacking in will and courage, and you know, and forceful proclamations that left open the door, perhaps where Trump could, you know, come in and say that there was a precedent for what he was doing. So. You know, in comparison, of course, you know, the great domestic accomplishments of President Obama will hopefully not be, you know, dissipated overnight by Trump's stroke of the pen. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just also wanted to add to that that apparently, and this is I've you know just kind of doing some quick research as you were talking, Jacob, that this claim that that what he is doing, what Trump is doing, was comparable to 2011, which is when President Obama banned visas from refugees from Iraq for 6 months. At least that was the claim. But when people fact checked it, they found that there was really not an analogy, because in 2011, the State Department kind of slowed down the number of visas it issued to Iraqis to review its vetting process. But the concern stemmed from a trigger. It was the arrests of two Iraqi refugees on terrorism charges, you may remember, in Bowling Green, Kentucky, in 2011. And one of the men was linked through fingerprints to an improvised explosive attack in Iraq. And so there was sort of a direct line of reasoning for why there needed to be a moment where people figured out who was coming from Iraq and whether, in fact, the vetting process was effective. But apparently, Mr. Trump, who has only a very passing relationship to the truth, is trying to claim that that he is doing what President Obama did, and just to Greg's question, it's not true. There's the analogy doesn't hold.
Yeah. Okay.
But Greg's other question had to do with this idea that, you know, that is contained in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. I'm trying to remember the exact language that when after a series of abuses and usurpations and kinds of things where the government is taking advantage of its power and literally abusing its power, that citizens not only have the right, the right, but the obligation to rise up.
Yep, I remember that from my college freshman course on American history.
And so I think that what he's, I mean, he's laying that into the conversation, but I guess wondering, I mean, one of the comments that you made was Americans do seem to be rising up and saying we're not going to just take this lying down.
Right. I mean, too many people have, you know, have bled. Too many people, you know, have died. I mean, the extraordinary exchange between Trump and Congressman John Lewis, you know, tells us mountains about the state of the world at this moment.
Indeed. Wonder what you think about some of the other moves that Trump has made. You know, you talked a little bit earlier about sending signals that the country is conducting a war against Islam, and I think of it made me think of the approval to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, and the shakeup of the National Security Council, where you've now infused those kinds of decisions with the worst kind of politics.
Let's take Jerusalem first. Any expert with half a brain on the Middle East would know this is one of the more, you know, cockeyed and dangerous proposals, you know, coming from the extreme right wing of the Jewish community. Of course, you know, with a president who's proposed putting his son-in-law in charge of negotiations between Israel and Palestine.
You know, I know. It's you have to laugh. It's so dangerous, thing. Though. It's really scary.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a cockamamie idea, and if that was, as if that weren't enough, then today in the last few days, he has placed Steve Bannon on the National Security Council as one of now the movers and shakers of foreign policy, and removed the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying that all the meetings that they have aren't really relevant to his expertise, although every decision they make puts the lives of U.S. soldiers and the military at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Stunning.
Stunning. Again, one of the hopeful signs, you know, that I have experienced, you know, personally, is that because of the Trump campaigns, and then the Trump appointments and the statements which keep coming out of this president's mouth or out of his Twitter addiction, is that, you know, the coming together of groups such as Jews and Muslims who, you know, spent the last 30, 40 years being wary of each other and arguing about Israel and Palestine, and all of a sudden we have a president who has done an extraordinary job of bringing the Jewish and Muslim communities together, far better than people in both communities who were trying to do that over the course of the last 20 years were able to do. But, you know, a common enemy and common threats to the security of this of minority groups in this country has produced an outpouring of coalition building such as we have not seen ever, I would propose, in this country.
Well, I am hopeful that this, and I think the real question for everyone is whether this this show of intersectional, if you will, dissatisfaction with what happened on November 8th will turn into some political action. And so I guess my final question for you is, what are next steps for CARE? I mean, where do you go from this weekend?
Well, we use it as one should use every step as a stepping stone to climb higher. You know, when they go low, we go high, and we take a view of morality and virtue which has always existed in this country, although obscured at times by the racist policies of expansionism and slavery and Jim Crow laws. We try to learn from our past mistakes and not repeat them. We go forward with the law at our side, and to say that there are legal nonviolent remedies to address the racism and bigotry proposals coming out of this administration. We urge people to consult with lawyers before they travel, sign up for our newsletter, which is pa.care.com. We will keep you informed of our progress and our actions as we work with other communities in these extraordinary times in which we find ourselves.
And I wonder if there's some way that we could kind of keep track of whatever legal action CARE is about to file.
I will certainly keep you abreast of that.
Okay, thank you so much, Jacob Bender, who is the executive director of the Council of American for American Islamic Relations here in Philadelphia. Thanks for kind of looking out at the airport, and we will keep track of what you're doing. Please feel free to call us back and let us know how things are going.
I will do. Assalamu alaikum. Shalom alaikum. Peace be on to all of us fighting for and struggling for justice and peace in this country.
Ya wa alaikum salam. We are talking Drumline on WURD 900 AM. We will be back, and I got a little challenge for you, and we'll open up the mic for the next 20 minutes or so. We'll have an open mic session. I want to hear what's on your mind about this and kind of where we go from here, or whether you think all of this marching and protesting is going to actually turn into political action that will change what we see happening right now.